Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC.
Hello and welcome into the Cubs Talk podcast sponsored by Wintrust. Head to Wintrust.com/Cubs for more information. I'm Jeff Nelson, the producer of the pregame and postgame shows on NBC Sports Chicago. But you don't want to hear from me. You want to hear from the two other guys here, David Kaplan and Tony Andracki, who joins us on the phone. Guys, we're going to take a lot of questions over from the fans over the next few minutes. First of all, before we do, Cap, your impressions. You got 10 games left. That long road trip is over. How are you feeling about the team right now?
Long road trip over, 18-11. I think the start of it, we all would have taken that. So I feel pretty good where they're at. I feel like the offense is starting to come back around. Starting pitching has been magnificent. They've dealt with some injuries, and they've battled through it. So, you know, I look going into the White Sox series, then the Pirates, then the Cardinals. I feel like the Cubs are going to lock this division up, but it's not going to be easy. I mean, the White Sox, the Pirates, and the Cardinals are all going to, you know, have look at the Cubs as having a bullseye on their chest. So it's going to be a fun 10 final games, but I do believe they will win the division.
Tony?
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. I mean, 18-11 over this stretch is nuts. And obviously the stretch ended up even much tougher than they anticipated, given that, you know, they had that rainout in that situation in D.C., had to play a doubleheader and some postponed games in there. And, I mean, they faced some really, really good pitchers. I mean, going back to the beginning, Aaron Nola and DeGrom and Syndergaard, they faced some good pitchers, some good teams. The fact that they're still sitting here, they've actually gained games on the Brewers in the process in first place. So it's definitely where you need to be at this point in the season. That being said, I think they should have, and they'll say it themselves, played better against the Brewers. I mean, winning only 2 of 6 games against Milwaukee in that stretch was a major disappointment from that end, and it really would have changed things at this point moving forward here.
Now, we saw in Arizona the offense finally breaks out in the first 2 games, and then game 3, 1 hit by Addison Russell. I guess that's kind of how the Cubs' offense has been almost all season. It's so streaky. You have games where you just seem like they can beat the 27 Yankees, and then games where they can't do anything.
Yeah, they've been a real up-and-down team, and if you just went, I think, Tony, you would concur, but weigh in. I think if you just looked at total runs scored and runs per game, you'd be like, oh, they're great. But then when you really dig deep and go, well, if I throw out a bunch of big ones, there's a lot of unproductive days offensively that leaves you a little bit concerned, because when you go to the playoffs, you're not facing fifth starters, you're not facing the low-end middle relievers, you're facing the best that each team's got.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there are plenty of issues with this offense that you're looking at right now, and, you know, it's a lot of these young guys. But that being said, I think those are the guys that aren't going to play as much in the postseason. We're not really sure what Ian Happ's role will be, if he's even active. Same with guys like David Bote. You know, and you figure Jason Hayward and Chris Bryant were together in the lineup on Tuesday, and that was the first time since, I think, first week of July or second week of July or whatever that's happened. And then, you know, you add Daniel Murphy. That had never happened before, where Murphy, Hayward, and Chris Bryant were all in the same lineup. You know, Ben Zobrist will be a huge part. So, yeah, there are different moving parts to this lineup, but I do agree they still need to take some steps forward if they're going to get to where they want to get to this October.
Tony, you mentioned Ben Zobrist. For me, he's got to be one of the biggest surprises of the season. This guy is third in the National League in hitting. And I guess it really proves that Joe knows what he's doing. Everybody wants to see Ben Zobrist play more and play more, but Joe being very cautious with his playing time, especially early on, that's really paying dividends in the second half of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and the fact that he's 37 years old and contending for the NL batting title is insane. He's never hit over 300 in a season in his whole career, and now he's potentially going to hit, you know, 315 or 320 or whatever he's flirting with, and possibly going to win a batting title. That there's no way anybody would have predicted that a year ago, even Zobrist himself.
Yeah, coming off that injury-plagued 2017 season, you know, you have a guy in Ben Zobrist who said he changed his training in the offseason, he got his wrist healthy, and he really starting to feel like, hey, man, I may not be done after this four-year contract. You know, that contract's up next year. And you go, all right, then he'll probably ride off into the sunset, yeah, count his money, and move on. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe he's finally found a youth that everybody's looking for. All right, let's get to some of the questions that were submitted to us. We'll start off with stuff about the postseason. The first one comes from Pete. Who leads off in the postseason? Will the Cubs have a consistent leadoff hitter, or will they continue to switch off like Joe has done during the regular season? Cap, why don't you go ahead?
I always thought that it would be Daniel Murphy once he came here, and then he struggled. He got into that rut, and I'm not sure he's a prototypical leadoff man. He gives you no speed at the top of the lineup. I really believe right now, going into the playoffs, it is going to be a mishmash of guys. We could see Rizzo leading off. We could see Almora leading off. We could see Jason Hayward leading off if he can run. We've got to see how his hamstring is. You could see Murphy. I think there could be four different leadoff guys as long as the run lasts.
And, Tony, that's kind of – it would be like Joe changing his attitude for the postseason. Joe has never been a guy who just wants to run out the same lineup day after day after day in the regular season. Why would he want to start now?
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, they're going to be completely different lineups against left-handed pitchers and right-handed pitchers. With Elmora's defense in center – and the fact that he still struggles against righties, you'll see him start against lefties, probably not against right-handers in the postseason. So like Cap said, you know, Almora is a good candidate for the leadoff spot against left-handed pitchers. You know, he's hitting like around 330, 340 against lefties in his career. Obviously, he doesn't walk a lot, but still, you'll take, you know, a 340 average. But yeah, you know, I agree. There's a lot of different guys that could be there. It's not – Daniel Murphy's not the prototypical leadoff hitter, and – considering he leads baseball in average with runners in scoring position the last three seasons, you want to get him out there with guys on base, potentially in scoring position. So you figure maybe like the five hole would be perfect for him. But, you know, I am curious too, given that Rizzo's led off a bunch this season and the fact that Chris Bryant has great on-base skills and is such a good base runner. I mean, I would not be surprised if Madden goes with either Rizzo or Bryant to lead off against right-handed pitchers in the postseason.
All right, let's move on. We got one from Mocha Truck. Is there room on the postseason roster for both David Bodie and Tommy La Stella?
I'm going to say to you that I would not be surprised, and I didn't think I'd say this a month ago, I would not be surprised if David Bodie doesn't make the postseason roster.
Yeah.
Because I think Terrence Gore is an imperative necessity to have a guy who can do what he can do. You know, when you're talking about playoff baseball, man, you got to steal a run wherever you can late in a ballgame. So I could see Terrence Gore being close to a lock to be there. Tommy La Stella has hit better than David Bodie. You look back at David Bodie's last 30 days, he's struggling at the plate.
He's 140 since the ultimate grand slam against the Nationals. He's 13 for 88 with 148 batting average.
Yeah, so I would not be shocked. Tony may disagree, but I would be surprised, actually, if Bodie's on the postseason.
Tony?
Well, you know, and I know we're going to get to Ian Happ later, but I don't think it's between La Stella and Bodie. I think La Stella has guaranteed that he's going to be out there just because of his left-handed bat and pinch hitting ability. It's a you know, small area of the game, just like Terrence Gore's base running. But I think those two guys, Gore and La Stella, are on the roster. So I think the last position player comes down to Ian Happ or David Bodie. And right now, even though I agree, Bodie's really struggled. I mean, he's still hitting the ball with a decent exit velocity. He still does all right against left-handed pitching. And more importantly, he plays really good infield defense. And the Cubs need that in the postseason because Daniel Murphy's a liability out there. You know, as good as Ben Zobrist has been, he's probably going to play a ton of outfield in October. So, I mean, you would love to have more depth and good defense depth behind, you know, Javi and Addison Russell and Chris Bryant as well. And I think, as you know, Ian Happ being a switch hitter, he still has struggled right-handed a ton. And, you know, he doesn't really have a position. He's only played one game at second base this year. His defense has just been okay at third, and his defense in the outfield has just been okay. So I feel like Bodie's defense could give him the edge over Happ.
You make a valid point. Yeah. If you left Ian Happ off, I could see Bodie nosing him out. Great point, Tony.
Yeah, just especially because if you got a guy like Daniel Murphy, where I could see that if the Cubs have the lead – You get go three times through the lineup, get three at-bats out of Murphy. Now you take Murphy out of the lineup. I would at that point, I would assume Javi would be your starting third baseman. Mm-hmm. You move Javi over to second, bring in Bodie. Bodie plays third. Or even, I mean, Bodie's defense at second is pretty good as well.
Yeah, my favorite lineup, again, it all changes based on pitching matchup, is Contreras catches, Rizzo's at first, Murphy's at second, Russell's at short, Baez is at third, Bryant is in left, Hayward's in center, and Zobrist is in right. That's my favorite lineup, depending, again, on the pitching matchup.
And then you got Elmore coming off the bench as well, and
correct,
for defensive purposes as well. I can
correct
swap out Zobrist like you would.
I feel like my infield defense on the left side with Baez and Russell, elite. I get my, as you said, three at-bats out of Daniel Murphy. I slide Javi back over there to second. Bodie, you go in and get third.
All right, Sig posed the question that we kind of touched on earlier, the likelihood of Terrence Gore both being on the playoff roster. You guys both are pushing for him, but what do you think the Cubs are thinking?
I think the Cubs are going to put him in there because you need that type of weapon. They had Leonis Martin a year ago. You need a guy. Look, he's not going to be a hitter for you. We know that. But boy, oh boy, to have a weapon like that standing on first, if you're a rundown or you're tie ballgame.
That's insane.
Whoa.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah,
when
I totally agree.
Yeah, when I was a kid, there was a video game where there was one batter who lead us by who would put down a bunt and pretty much you just hit go and he would steal second and third without even the closest play. That's the kind of guy that he is.
Yeah, he's like Billy Hamilton.
Yeah, it's insane how fast he goes.
Agreed.
So Tony, you think we're going to see him come October?
Oh, definitely. I mean, like you brought up, you know, Leonis Martin and Quinton Berry a couple years ago. These were the same kind of guys. In terms of what they brought to the team, but Terrence Gore is the best at it. And Theo Epstein talked about it at, you know, on the Cubs' last homestand that, you know, with Gore, it's not like you just got a guy who's fast and, you know, considering there's all these pinch runners in the game, or not all of them, but some of them, and Terrence Gore is the best at it. You have the best at this really, you know, small niche of an opportunity, and Gore is the best. And even when you think about it, too, his speed, if they absolutely needed it, would be great defense in the outfield as well. So, I think he's absolutely on the roster come October.
Alex Caseberg says, Chris Bryant hit an awesome home run that Jim Deshays called, but is KB really 100%? I don't believe that he is. Nelly, do you?
I don't think he is. He's just
T.A.
No, I don't think he's 100% yet. I think we have kind of seen that. He just still doesn't quite look like Chris Bryant. But that being said, I mean, he looks a lot better than he did even before he went on the DL the first or second time. So it's the swing still, the one-handed finish, every time I see it, I kind of cringe a little bit thinking that he might hurt his shoulder again in games. But if he's not doing it outside of games, then there is less pressure on that shoulder. And, you know, his numbers in September are pretty good. He's hitting over 300 with an OPS, I think, around 900. So it's small sample size, but still, it's looking more like the Chris Bryant of old, just not 100% yet.
Okay, I've got one. This is from me, who's sitting just to Cap's right. You're in a clinching game
or
in the
Cap's
playoffs.
Left.
Cap's left. Like they know out there. For all you listening to the podcast, I was on the wrong side. Okay, you guys are in a clinching game. The Cubs have a one-run lead. The starters just pitched 8 2/3 innings. However, Joe takes them out with the bases loaded and only a one-run lead. A switch hitter is coming up. You've got the entire bullpen to your thing. Who do you trust to get that out?
Well, first of all, I'd ask you, is the hitter better from the right
let's
or
say
left?
Let's say the splits are pretty much the same.
I'm going to Justin Wilson. I want a guy that throws 97 miles an hour, and I hope he would trust his fastball as opposed to getting beat with his second or third best pitch, either a curveball or slider or something off speed. I would probably go to Justin Wilson.
Yeah, I agree. I would go to Justin Wilson as well. That four-seam fastball really is a weapon, and it is a weapon against both righties and lefties. So as long as he's still pumping that for strikes and in a good place mentally, I think Wilson's your guy.
Yeah, let's give him some credit for bouncing back from what he had. A year ago at this point, if we would have posed that question, somebody would say Justin Wilson. Heck, even a month ago, some Cub fans would be good. Justin Wilson, no way, no way.
So
he's been really good.
If you go back through the numbers, from August 5th on, he's been magnificent. August 5th was the last time that he had any type of a hiccup coming out of the pen. And I just think, look, he throws 97. He's, I think, has the stomach to do this job. And I think he has finally gotten himself over that mental hurdle. So that's where I'm going. I'm heading to Baltimore going, go get him, big guy.
Okay, Brandon weighs in. What is Dylan Maple's role? Does he even have a role with the team with Morrow Dunn Strope, the question mark? Is he a guy that could be possibly make the postseason roster? Tony?
Yeah, I think actually Maples is this weird dark horse candidate to make the roster. I mean, yeah, Morrow's out of it, and I think the Cubs are only going to carry seven relievers. They've only carried 11 pitchers postseason series last year, both Diaz and. So, you know, there's basically one spot available, maybe two if Pedro Strop can't come back. And I think Maples could absolutely be that guy. He's got that stuff. He's got the triple-digit fastball. He's got this wipeout slider. I mean, you see some of these guys who even have seen it, you know what's coming, like Lorenzo Cain. I think about in Milwaukee, even when Maples had no control, Cain buckled on back-to-back sliders from Maples. So he just has such dynamic stuff that if he actually starts to harness it a bit, which he has been his last few times out, he could be their October kind of trick up Joe Maddon's sleeve.
Yeah, I'm with him. The kid that throws that hard, but he's got to throw strikes. Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of your questions on the Cubs Talk podcast.
On the go and can't watch the Cubs game? Remember, you can live stream all NBC Sports Chicago games. Download the NBC Sports app or watch it at NBCSportsChicago.com.
All right, guys, everybody, welcome back into the Cubs Talk podcast. Jeff Nelson here with David Kaplan and Tony Andracki. Bovada just released some the latest odds about the National League MVP. Javi Baez is their odds on favorite at 10 to 11. So Chris asks, only three MVPs have had a lower on-base percentage than Javi, and only 10 have ever won an MVP award with an on-base percentage below 350. Javi on the day off is at 329. Could you justify voting for Javi for MVP above Lorenzo Cain, who leads the National League in WAR, or there's a lot of good names on this list, Yelich, Carpenter, Freeman, Trevor Story, Kaplan.
Goldschmidt, Arenado, there's a bunch of them. And we mentioned Matt Carpenter, who had that great run there, you know, in the latter portion of the season. Look, Javi Baez is the best defender of the group, and there's some really good defenders. I mean, Yelich is a solid defender. Arenado's a gold glove defender. But for me, base running and ability to hit the baseball, ability to defend, there is no one on that list that has the complete package of skills that Javier Baez has. For me, he's clearly the NL MVP, especially when you factor in 2 months of no Bryant, an awful first month of Rizzo. You've had one win out of Darvish. You got very little out of Chatwood. Morrow's been gone since the middle to early portion of July, and the Cubs still have the best record because that guy's the best player in the league.
Tony, and you also have to factor in the intangibles. Just there's something when Javi gets on base or comes to the plate, there's a buzz in the air that isn't there with most other players.
Right. I mean, you just look at, I forget who it was at Fangraphs, wrote an interesting article last week about Javi's secret skill, and basically he just induces the opposing fielders to make errors. Who knows why? I mean, it's happened with Lorenzo Cain a couple times over the last few months, and this is a gold glove, you know, defensive outfielder where he just is so worried about Javi, he's losing track of the ball and everything else. And so I think, yeah, that's definitely a factor that you can't quite quantify, but I agree with you, Cap. I mean, when you factor everything in, you look at the most valuable person to their team, it's Javi, because on the Brewers you have both Yelich and Cain. On the Rockies you have both Story and Arenado. And these other teams, I mean, Freddie Freeman deserves it, sure, but Javi has better numbers than Freeman in a lot of categories. So I think it's got to be Javi. I don't know if he's necessarily the overwhelming favorite like Bovada says, but I think right now my vote would be for Javi, and I imagine a lot of other people's would as well.
Absolutely. It's just the intangibles and the excitement. And with two guys on the Brewers, you think maybe they're going to split votes. Two guys on the Rockies, maybe they split votes. Cubs, right. He is clearly the Cubs MVP.
Clearly the Cubs MVP.
Okay, Eric brings up an interesting point. With some first-inning pitching struggles and no Morrow for the postseason, would you consider starting Hendricks or Q's game with a reliever a la Tampa Bay and then bring the Hendricks or Quintana in the second and third to avoid the top of the order, maybe get them deeper in the game?
In the playoffs?
Playoffs?
Yeah. No, absolutely not. You want to try that in May and go, here's this cute little idea. Let's see how it works out. Okay, I'm not a big fan, but okay. In the playoffs, no flipping shot.
Tony, is that out of Joe's bag of tricks?
It's just, yeah, like what Cap said, I mean, you can't try. They only have 10 games left, so that would be like at most two starts for each guy if you talk about Hendricks and Quintana. But, I mean, it's just they're not used to that. They would never be used to that, to starting in the second or third inning, and the reliever would not be used to just pitching the first. So it would be very difficult. And, you know, the other thing, too, is Hendricks has actually been very good in the first inning, and he's actually been very good in any inning lately. And Quintana as well has been pretty solid in the first. So I think it'd be difficult. And also I just would wonder, like, who would that guy be? Would it be Jesse Chavez? And then, you know, you potentially lose him for later in the game. Would the opener actually be, like, you know, Carl Edwards Jr.? And then if he gets in control issues, then, you know, you could be down one or two runs, so it doesn't help you at all anyway. I don't know who their guy would be to open like the Rays and A's have had with some of their players.
Well, and even if you had the right guy to do that, what if he's not any good?
Yep.
It's just, it's off, and all of a sudden you go, great, we're 3-0 down in the first. Yeah, no yeah. shot.
I only wish this idea was in vogue like last year, and Madden would have tried to tell John Lackey that, by the way, you're coming into the third inning. Right. I would have loved to have seen that just to see the reaction.
Right. That would have been fun.
Yeah. Another starting pitching question from Kyle. What do the Cubs do with Tyler Chatwood? Will they try to trade him for anything or just eat the salary and release him? Even if he says he's healthy this year, I don't see him coming back, especially in the postseason. But who's out there for a replacement for next year? I think we're all agreeing that Tyler Chatwood is not making the postseason roster at this point.
Oh, he has. You have a better chance.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
There's no chance he's on the postseason roster.
But, Tony, is there any team out there that would take a flyer on him? A, if the Cubs are willing to deal him. B, what possibly would anybody want to give up to get him?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I don't know. I mean, he'll have roughly $27 million, $28 million left on his deal in 2 years. So, you know, the Cubs would have to eat a decent chunk of change on that in order to, you know, get rid of a guy who's walked over a batter in an inning this year. I think they're going to give him a shot, at least in spring training, to, if nothing else, audition himself. But, you know, you can never have too much pitching, and you never know what's going to happen. But at this point, I think if Darvish is able to make it back, he's in the rotation. And then I think you have to pick up the option, the $20 million option on Cole Hamels as well. And then, you know, just let the pieces fall where they may with Chatwood. If he still struggles with his command, maybe they even release him if they can't get a trade. So I don't know exactly what would happen, but either way, he's not pitching again this year.
Yeah, and I don't see a scenario where he's on this team when they go to spring training. I don't. I think what ends up happening is they're going to have to move somebody, whether that's Schwarber, whether that's Happ, whether that's Russell. And they're going to say, okay, you want – Addison Russell, a 23-year-old shortstop.
Under control.
Under control, elite defensively, has proven he can play on a big stage, might need a change of scenery. Well, guess what? We'll eat half the money. You're getting Tyler Chatwood, but you're getting a starting pitcher with really good stuff for $6.5 million a year. That's how I think this thing goes down.
That's interesting. And Tony, we brought Cole Hamels. I mean, when the trade went down, I think everybody thought, oh, we're pretty much buying him out for next year for $2 million. Now it seems almost certain that this is a guy who's pretty much going to be a lock for the rotation next year.
Yeah, I think so. Assuming he's healthy and stuff. But, you know, at age 34, he's been their best starting pitcher up until the one, you know, poor outing in Arizona. But other than that, he's, like, been rock solid. He has been the guy that has helped turn everything around. It's no coincidence that the rest of the rotation has really filled in after Chatwood left the rotation and Hamels was inserted in. And he's just a guy that, you know, they like him in the clubhouse. He's pitched in big games before. He has, you know, a little bit of the leadership and, you know, says interesting things like about the Brewers and stuff like that. So it just in a lot of areas, you know, fans like him. He's just a perfect fit to come back for 1 year. And really, I mean, 1 year, $20 million on pitching. Like, I know $20 million's a lot.
But that's kind of a bargain nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. And for a guy who can do what Hamels can do, I think it's definitely a bargain.
Austin Chesney on Twitter says, shot or no shot, Cubs win the World Series with this current bullpen. I'm going to say shot because it's got depth. It just doesn't have the elite back end arm.
Yeah, everybody's seeing how stacked the American League is, and there are some really, really good teams there. You only got beat one of them. They're going to beat up on each other for a few weeks before the Cubs,
correct,
if they get that far. Go that far. Tony, what are your thoughts?
You know, I just go back to, you brought up a good point about the American League. The National League does not have a stable bullpen outside of Milwaukee And even then, you know, they had to remove Corey Knebel from the closer's role in July. So everybody else doesn't have this stable, like, lockdown closer like the Cubs do. And because Kenley Jansen has the heart scare in L.A., and these other teams have had so many issues. So, yeah, I think they absolutely could. But, you know, the Astros did it last year without a lockdown closer and without a lot of their bullpen arms pitching up to capability. I mean, Charlie Morton was the guy that closed out Game 7. So who knows? I mean, maybe as a Cubs starter, then it ends up moving back. Or Mike Montgomery is the guy. He's been generating a lot of swings and misses now, too. If you fold him back into the bullpen, that helps. So I think they absolutely can win the World Series with this, but it still might be their downfall if they don't have that one go-to guy.
Okay, we got one more, and this is for Cap, and it comes from Tony, who may or may not be the same Tony that's on the phone with us right now. Is Joe Maddon the National League Manager of the Year?
Look, I talked about this on the radio today. I find it absolutely embarrassing if you're a Cubs fan and you want this guy out as the manager. Look, he got here. The day he was hired, they were a 73-89 team. Now, granted, the talent level got better. I understand that. They signed John Lester. Chris Bryant became the Rookie of the Year. But he's gone to three straight NLCS. He's got a chance to go to a fourth straight. He won a World Series for the first time in 108 years. They have gotten Zippo out of Darvish, one win. Zippo out of Chatwood. Half a season out of Brandon Morrow. Half a season out of Chris Bryant, who I'm not convinced is playing healthy. Addison Russell has been downright lousy. Wilson Contreras has been, okay. Certainly isn't showing you the elite bat and power that he's had. So you add all of that in, and this guy has the best record in the National League again. If I had given you all those scenarios, I guarantee you every media person would have gone, and every fan, no shot. They're not even making the playoffs. And they sit with the best record. So if you think Joe Maddon should be out of here, I think you're out of your flipping mind.
Yeah, Tony, I think for me it's feels like a lot like Javi. It's not just everything that he can do. It's also the intangibles, too. The attitude that he sets, the way that he gets the guys to follow.
Run the clubhouse.
Yes, he had a bad game in the Washington. That there's a lot of things that he did that people could question. But overall, this may be the best managerial job he did all in his tenure with Chicago. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, and I love the reaction from Cap. That's exactly what I was hoping for with the question, too. So, but, yeah, I do agree. And, yes, he made a mistake, I believe, in Washington with strobe hitting. And he may have made a mistake in, you know, having Brandon Morrow throw a third game in a row on June 2nd in New York. But every manager makes mistakes throughout the year, every single one of them, whether they win AL, you know, Manager of the Year, NL Manager of the Year. Regardless, these guys will make mistakes at points, and you can never predict when injuries happen. I think Joe Maddon is the clear NL Manager of the Year this year. This is the best work that I've seen him do in a Cubs uniform. So I don't think it's any question at this point.
All right. That's going to do it for all our time. I want to thank everybody for all their questions. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Cap. That's going to do it for this edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast at NBCSportsChicago.com, presented by Wintrust. Stay with us for everything you need to know about the Cubs. Thanks, and we'll be talking to you soon.